Come to our Paul's first statement, and we're going to title this, of course, our first statement is Paul's statement of acceptance. Now, he says in verse 6, here's Paul's statement of acceptance, 6a, it's the first part of it. He said, I'm now ready to be offered. Now, most generally, when we're talking to somebody, when we're talking about someone needing to be ready, we're usually talking about someone needing to be saved, aren't we? Sometimes I'll go visit people. I'll visit people on deathbeds. I visit different people. And they're at a time when you don't know whether they're going to be here or not. And you want to try to make sure that they're what? Somebody tell me. You want to make sure that they're ready. But I don't think that's the idea here. I think Paul was ready to go. No doubt he was Paul. He was saved, so he's ready to go. But I think the idea of ready here, he says, I'm ready to be offered. I'm ready to be offered. So I think he knew he was saved, but I think the hope that he would be delivered was gone. As a matter of fact, when you go back and you look at the book of Philippians, he had hopes after his arrest that through their prayer, he perhaps would be delivered. But now here, he don't think that's going to happen. Now, that's why he said, I'm now ready to be offered. He recognizes the fact that he wasn't going to get out of there and go be able to go loose preaching again. That his ministry was going to come to an end and that his life was going to come to an end. And I think that's the idea of he being ready. He said, I'm ready to be offered. And that simply means he was ready to go. He's accepted the fact. He's accepted the fact that he's going to die. He's accepted that fact. He knew he was. He knew it was imminent. He knew it was coming. And he knew that it wasn't going to be. You know, you go look at 2 Timothy. It's a different attitude than the book of Philippians. Philippians was when he was in his early part of being arrested. He had the high hopes of being set free. But not here. He realized he wasn't going to be let loose. He realized he was going to do what again? He's going to die. So what's interesting here in verse 6, he said, I'm now ready to be offered. That's a drink offering. He said, I'm going to be poured out. That's the picture you have here. And think about it a little bit. They did that in the Old Testament sometime with some sacrifices. They would take the fruit of the vine and they would pour it upon the... Sometimes you'll read them make an offering, and with that offering they'd bring a drink offering. And they'd have the wine in there, and what would they do with it? Poured it out. So he says, I'm now ready to be poured out. That's what he's telling you. Now, isn't that an apt picture of what it means to die? I mean, here you have a vessel, and you have it full of the fruit of the vine, and then you pour it out, and then you've all the drinks gone, and then it's what kind of vessel? It's an empty vessel. One of these days, I'm going to be poured out. If the Lord doesn't come in my lifetime, then the Spirit which give this body life, one of these days is going to be poured out. And that's what he's talking about dying. And you know what? My spirit's going to leave, but my body is going to be what kind of vessel? Somebody hollered out. I'm going to be an empty vessel. I'm going to be an empty vessel. My spirit's going to leave my body. And when my spirit leaves my body, what about my body? It's an empty vessel. It's dead. Man, if I die tomorrow, you'd probably come up and look at me laying up here somewhere. And you'd say, well, now, he really ain't there, is he? I was waiting on a shout there. He really ain't there. Well, I ain't there. I won't be there. That's my shell. That's my empty vessel. That's exactly right. That's my empty vessel. I've done been poured out. I ain't there. I got poured out the moment that I passed. My spirit was poured out of this vessel, and it goes off to be, of course, with the Lord. So you see the terminology. You understand what it means to be poured out. Important things is when the day you die, it's when you're poured out where you go. That's the most important thing they are in this world, and I don't know of anything yet any more important than that. I don't know why in the world people don't put more priority in the things of the Lord than they do. I tell you, knowing the Savior, knowing that if I'd get poured out tonight, or if you get poured out tonight, knowing where you get poured out and where you go to changes everything, gives you confidence. I don't worry when I lay down on my pillow at night whether where I'm going to be going. If I don't wake up in the morning, I know where I'm going. I know where I'm going to go when I'm poured out. All God's people saying. This reminds me a little bit of people that I've met or people that I loved and knew over the years. It reminds me of terminal illness. It really does. When I read about him, he knew it. He fought it for 2 years, so to speak. I mean, for 2 years he was arrested, and then he got in a shape where he wasn't going to be set free. He knew he wasn't going to get out of it. And the hopes of being set free were now gone. So, and sometimes terminal illness is that way. You pray and you pray and you pray and you pray and you pray, and you know that God's able to reach down and touch in a mighty way. I mean, you can read in the Old Testament, there's a man by the name of Hezekiah, and the prophet Isaiah came to him. He said, "Set your house in order." That means make all your funeral arrangements. "Set your house in order, for thou shalt die, not live." That's what the prophet said. And prophets just told you what God said. They didn't sugarcoat anything. And then they weren't to add or diminish. They'd tell you what God said and leave. Well, Isaiah left, and Hezekiah turned over to the wall and started crying and started praying to the Lord. And then as Isaiah was leaving, the Lord come to him again and said, "Now you go back and you tell him I've heard his prayer. And I've seen his tears, and I'm going to add 15 years to his life. You go back and tell him." And the Lord sometimes, folks, the Lord sometimes does that. And you always have that hope. And I think Paul had that hope of being released. But now he was sure it wasn't happening. So now he had adopted another man thought, or another way of thinking. And this time, he said, "I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready to be poured out." See the difference? And I've seen people that way. I've had people that I prayed for that were the same way. I had one of my aunts, Aunt Bonnie, was that way. I went and seen her down in Huntington, and she'd been so grievously sick and just horribly sick. And she looked at me, and I prayed for her, and talked to her. She said, "Yeah, I want to go. Ask him to take me." That's what she said. About broke my heart, but she was ready to be poured out. She'd done had enough of that. She had done had enough, and she knowed where she was going. She said, "I want to go. Pray that he take me. Would you pray that he take me?" Do y'all understand her? She just got tired of it after a while, and she realized that she'd be set free the moment she was poured out. That'd all be gone. All that pain, suffering, sorrow, sickness, it would all be gone. Miss Debbie, your music here, sat in front of Brother Doug, did the same thing. She got so, you have the high hopes of the healing, and then it becomes apparent that the Lord's going to bring him home. And Miss Debbie was the same way. She said, "Jeff, why don't he take me?" She said, "Why don't he take me?" I said, "Well, Miss Debbie, he will. In his time, he might make you better." "Well, I know that, but I want to go." That's what she said. What she said. Sister Margie, I can go down through a list of people, said the same thing. They all knew the Lord, though. You see the difference? They all knew where they was going. They all knew it. And it's different when someone has the confidence of salvation. It's all together. The death is different. Sister Margie, they stopped by and said, "Jeff, you need to go up. She's done taking the bed there, and I don't think she's ever going to be able to get back up and all this." I went up there, and she's sitting in her chair. I walked in the door, and I was in shock. I was expecting what I was expecting. She's sitting in her chair. And I walked through the door and she said, "Surprised you didn't." I said, "You sure did. You sure did." She could tell. I mean, I was shocked. I was expecting to see somebody laying there. There she's sitting in the chair. She said, "No." She said, "I started feeling better." And I think she died later on that day. I'd never seen anything like it. She sat there. She got the Lord, I think, raised her up long enough to tell everybody goodbye. I think that's what he did. She got up out of there and went in there and sat in that bed, and then her grandkids come in, her family come in, and then the old preacher come in, and she was smiling and talking and sitting and just like never been sick a day in her life. Never seen anybody like her. She's something else. She is something else. So then later on she went. I think she was just like this. She was ready to be what? Somebody tell me again. Poured out. She was ready to be poured out. She knew where she was going. And you all know what I'm talking about. You got family been through the same thing. They get sick of it. When it comes to a parent that they're not going to be healed, then they say, "Hey, I'm ready to get out of here. I'm ready to be poured out. I'm ready to be poured out." So I want you to know you need to be ever ready to be poured out too. You need to be ever ready to be poured out, because it brings us to our next point. Brings us to our next point. You don't ever know. You don't ever know when you're going to be poured out. Let's go back to 2 Timothy chapter 4. I think you're still there. So our first statement is the statement of acceptance in this text. And that statement of acceptance is, he's ready. To be poured out. And see, the word offering there is a drink offering. And he's ready to go. He's done accepted. What's going to happen is going to happen. He's done accepted it. And he was ready to go. And I'm going to tell you tonight, there's nothing any more important than being ready to go. Nothing any more important than being ready to go. Y'all agree with me? Number two. Let's look at Paul's statement. We've looked at his statement of acceptance. Now let's look at his statement of death. And it's mentioned, of course, to being poured out is a statement of death. We could have included it under there. But I wanted to look especially at 6b. Everybody understand verse 6a? I'm now ready to be offered. At 6a, poured out. Now 6b is, and the time of my departure. The time of my departure is at hand. Now, there's two statements I want to get, two statements about death here. And let me go ahead and give them to you in the front here. It says that death has a time. See, he said the time of my departure. And then number two, he describes death as a departure. Death is described as a departure, and it's also described as a time. Let's go to the book of Ecclesiastes. That's one of them hard books to find, but you know, you can struggle through it. Book of Ecclesiastes. It's right after Proverbs, if you have any trouble with it. Book of Proverbs, of course, we're doing that on Wednesday nights. That's been a blessed study on Wednesday night. Death has a time. There's a time of death. As sure as you have a birth date, you also have a death date. Unless we're part of that generation that never dies. There'll be a generation that never dies. I'd like to be in that one. Wouldn't you like? I'd like to go up that way. I really would. But I'm going up one way or the other. One way or the other, I'm going up. But I'll tell you what, it's a blessing when you know you're going up. So death has a time. We don't know when it is. The Bible in Psalms 90 says the average lifespan is 70. You're not promised that. And it might be tomorrow. It might be this evening. It might be next week. The fact remains is you just don't know when. That person that's sick might outlive you. Because no one knows their time. That's why you always have to be ready. I mean, I hear lost people all the time in funeral homes. They'll go by and look somebody and they know, and they'll say, "Boy, you just don't, You just don't know. Yeah, you don't. That's why you need to be ready. What in the world are you thinking? I tell you what they're thinking. They're gambling with their soul that there's going to be another time. The biggest gamblers ain't down in Las Vegas. The biggest gamblers is the one that believe in heaven and hell and believe that Jesus is the Savior and have never trusted Him, but gamble that there's going to be another day to do it. Fools is what they are. Absolute fools does that. Now, in many cases, they die a fool's death. They know it, they've heard it, but they've never trusted it. And they gamble that there'd be another opportunity. I was witnessing to a man one time in my office at work. I had a situation where my door was and he couldn't run, you know. He said, I used to be a deacon in a church. I said, well, huh. I said, I ain't going to go back over all these things. But I said, are you saved now? Ain't no use to go down all these other paths. You need to get right down to the business. I said, are you saved now? No, I don't think of it. I said, if Jesus would come now, would he be coming for you? No, I don't think I'm saved now. Okay. Now we know where we stand, right? Right, he said. I said, but if you knew in the next 5 minutes that Jesus was coming, and if you knew in the next five, knew it, which you don't, but if you knew in the next 5 minutes you were going to die, what would you do? First thing I'd do, get saved. I said, you're not guaranteed 5 minutes. You're not guaranteed 5 minutes. So there's a lot of people like that. And many of them die what I call a fool's death. Know the way? At the same time, they never trusted the way. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 2 is one that you know pretty well. It says there's a time to be born and there's a time to die. There's a time to be born and there's a time to die. Look over Ecclesiastes chapter, let's go to chapter 8. Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Verse 8 says there is no man. There is no man that hath power over the Spirit. There is no man that hath power over the Spirit. Now, what are we talking about the Spirit? We're talking about when you die, your spirit leaves your body. That's what death is. So that's what it's talking about, your spirit, that which gives your body life. That's what we're talking about. So he said, there's no man that hath power over the Spirit to retain the Spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death. In other words, when the day of death comes, you can't hold your spirit in your body. It's leaving. You're not going to stop it. When the Lord calls the spirit out, it's coming. So there's a time of death. And when the time of death comes, you cannot retain your spirit. Ecclesiastes 9 and the verse 2, I think it is. That don't look right to me looking at it. Let me see if I can find it. 9 and verse 12. That's it. Here it has specifically, for a man also knows not his times. So that means you have one. You have one. I'm glad I don't know when mine is, I guess. I mean, aren't you? I mean, I don't know when it is. Neither do you. So that's why you always have to be ready. And I wanted to give you a little something else with this. That's also why you need to be serving the Lord, too. I don't want to waste my life serving the world. If you're saved, you need to be serving Him. And you need to be faithful to His house. You need to be in His word. You need to be witnessing to folks. You need to, for me to live as Christ when you're born again. Great host of people claim to be Christians out there that have no desire to serve Jesus, and I'm telling you, there's something wrong with that. I'm sick of that. But it's always been. It's always been, and I guess it always will be. But, you know, when you're saved, you become a what again? You become a servant. So Paul's statements of death is that death has a what again? It's a time, and it's an appointed time. Let's look back. You're still in Ecclesiastes. We'll try to find another text for you. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 1. Solomon wrote a whole lot about death. He says, a good name is better than precious ointment. And the day of death than the day of one's birth. Now, is that true of everybody? That's my question to you. Is the day of your death better than the day of your birth? Is that true of everybody? It's true of people who are saved. I've done my cousin's, Teresa Brown. Me and her went through all through school together. I loved her. She's like my little sister. This was the text I used. And the question was, will your death day be better than your birthday? You know, when you're saved, it will be. The day of your death is better because, man, you take somebody that knows Jesus and you take someone that's terminally ill that knows Jesus, and I think the moment they die, they're set free from all that. It's all gone. They don't hurt anymore. I just can imagine, I know some people that I've loved over the years that's passed for different things, I just think the moment they're poured out, how they feel, just that very, I don't know how he can bake it down in, just that very moment that they're set free, I think, oh my, I think it's like, this is great. I really do. This is great. And the affliction and the pain and the suffering and the sickness and the joy. I think it's awesome. I just think it's, maybe we may know that feeling one of these days, but it's only something that someone's went through it knows. I think that, y'all think that's something? I really do. And if you're, so your death day will even be better than your very bestest birthday. It really is when you're born again. And that's true of everybody that's saved. True of everybody that's saved. So it's a glorious thing. So he calls death here, he says it has a time. Now let's go back to our text in 2 Timothy. I'm going to close here in just a moment. I can't go on to the third one. Hollis don't got no confidence in me whatsoever. Yeah, because he just smiles when I say, I don't think I'll get done. He knows I won't. 2 Timothy chapter 4. We've looked at two things. Paul's statement of acceptance. He said, I'm now what? Ready to be poured out. I'm ready for it. Ready to go. He had confidence. God give him dying grace. You ever heard me say God will give you grace for what you face? He'll give you dying grace when it's time. But it don't come till it's time. When it comes, he'll be there. When it comes, it'll be there and give you grace for it. And then he'll usher you off to be with him. I really do think your first thought will be, oh, how wonderful. Oh, how wonderful this is. Oh, how wonderful this is. Never be sick again. All right. Now, he calls death in our second statement, Paul's statements of death, he said death had a time, right? That time means it's an appointment. It's an appointment you're going to keep. You just don't know when it is. You're going to keep that appointment. Mike, you're going to keep that appointment. You just don't know when it is. You just don't know when it is. Now he calls death also. He said, I'm now ready to be offered. He's ready. He's done, accepted the fact that it's coming. He said, the time of my... He realizes he had a time. And he called it a departure. And I like that word. The time of my departure is at hand. The time of my departure. Sometimes you can hear that at an airport. They'll say it's such and such a gate. Such and such a plane is departing. And they're leaving. The people on that plane is leaving to go off on a trip somewhere. That's how it is for us. One of these days you'll be leaving and it'll be the time of your departure implies destination. Implies you're going somewhere. So Paul said the time of my departure is at hand. I hope I got this marked, but you carry big books, it makes you look smarter, I think. Stu, you'll get me tickled. Now, 2 Timothy. Do what? It's a big old book, eh? Take a bigger book than that, don't you? Okay, 2 Timothy chapter 4. Now, this word departure was used for different things, and this will give you the idea of it, and that's why I brought it. The word departure was a seaman's word used of unloosing of a ship from its anchorage. That's what it was used for. When you use this term, it was used here for departure. It was like someone reaching down and getting your ropes off the dock and loosening it and letting it go what? Letting it go free. That's how it describes the word departure. One of these days, you know, right now I'm tied to this old dock here on this earth, but one of these days, yeah, that ropes are going to be loosed and I want to sail off to glory. See the picture? That's why it uses this. That's why it uses this terminology. I'm going to sail out of here one of these days, but I know where I'm going. One of these days, they're going to loose the ropes and get out of here. And so are you. And if you're born again, that's the most important thing. It was also a plowman's word, somebody that would plow up their land, for denoting the unyoking of a weary team of animals after a hard day. Here you have a yoke of oxen, and you've plowed with them all day, and there they're at the end of the day, and you go to the barn, and you unloose them from the yoke. Same kind of word used to describe that, too. I thought that was real cool. Weary in life, weary in the things of the world, maybe weary from sickness, maybe weary from labor, and one of these days, what the Lord's going to do is He's going to set us loose from our yoke, and we'll be set free. To go off. That's another idea of the word, how the word depart was used. So these are just beautiful pictures. The third way it was used, it was a traveler's expression suggesting the striking of a tent and preparatory to setting out on a march. But it basically means you have your tent down, you have your ropes down, and you pull it up, and you're going off. On a trip. So all of that was for the word departure. And Paul recognized that he wasn't going to be staying here. Paul knew where he's going. The time of his departure was at hand. And one of these days that's going to be true if the Lord doesn't come in our life. One of these days that's going to be true of us also. Well, we're going to stop right there.